Welcome to the CES Energy Solutions Corp conference call and webcast with respect to the recently announced results for the second quarter ending June 30th, 2017. Presenting the company today will be Mr. Tom Simons, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Craig Nieboer, Chief Financial Officer. Please be advised that this call is being recorded. A question and answer session will follow the end of the presentation. Please also be advised that this conference call may not be recorded or rebroadcast without the consent of CES Energy Solutions. I would now like to turn the conference call over to Mr. Craig Nieboer. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone, and thanks for attending today's call. Before we start, I think Tom and I would like to make it clear that even though Total might have been trying to take over our call, there's no evidence that they're trying to take over CES, so we're pleased to respond to that immediately. I'd like to note that in our commentary today, there will be forward-looking financial information and that our actual results may differ materially from the expected results due to various risk factors and assumptions. These risk factors and assumptions are summarized in our second quarter MD&A and press release dated August 10, 2017, in our annual information form dated March 9, 2017. In addition, certain financial measures that we will refer to today are not recognized under current generally accepted accounting policies, and for a description and definition of these, please see our second quarter MD&A. At this time, I'll turn it over to Tom, our President and CEO.
Thank you, Craig, and thank you to callers. On today's call, we're going to talk about Q2's very strong results and specifically how a Canadian-based services company has managed to make almost as much money in Q2 as Q1. As customary, we'll provide a very detailed operations update on all parts of the business, including initiatives in the different business units to expand and improve our company. We're also going to share our expectations or outlook on drilling completion activity for industry, and why we've noted that we see a slightly lower trigger point for upstream activity. Specifically, we see our customers able to generate cash flow and execute on their D&C programs at probably closer to $45 oil and $3 gas than $50 oil and $3 gas, as we've previously highlighted. Craig will provide a detailed financial update, we'll take questions, then we'll make closing remarks and conclude the call. For Q2, the company managed to post $35.3 million in EBITDA. We did this by making good on our long-established strategy to utilize our vertical integration in chemistry, polymers, and minerals that we sell to industry. We're leveraging our vast North American footprint to create revenue through drilling, completions, workovers and stimulation, production, and pipelines and storage. In very simple terms, we're trying to sell our products and services to the same well three and four different times. Our working managers and salespeople are successfully utilizing our 60-plus scientists that work across our eight labs to solve problems. That's how we improve results for our customers and win business for ourselves. We also continue to run the company with a greatly reduced fixed cost base as compared to the days of $100 oil. This allowed the company to be nicely profitable in both Canada and the U.S. I'll note for me personally, for 16 years as either an owner or a CEO, these kinds of results in Canada in Q2 are unprecedented in my working career. Now I'll get into the operations update. To start with, Canadian Drilling Fluids enjoyed tremendous market share at 40% in Q2. Today, we have 80 jobs running in Canada. We continue to have a strong presence in the deep and long reach horizontal well market. We also continue to be busy in the oil sands and the Southeast Saskatchewan market. Our Canadian drilling fluid people continue to lower drilling days for our customers, which explains our phenomenal market share. We see activity at about these levels, or maybe slightly less for the second half of the year, notwithstanding changes in commodity prices. PureChem continues to win new business. The Deep Basin and the conventional market represent our biggest gains to date. We also continue to be very focused on heavy oil and are constantly making small wins that we think eventually become a big business for. recently closed on buying land in Grand Prairie and intend to build rail, a world-class tank and blending farm, and warehousing for PureChem. The rail can also help our existing drilling fluid business in the Deep Basin, specifically around minerals like barite. We think the bill will take about a year. We believe in time it'll create additional top line, drive better margins, and help to further establish us as the preeminent full-cycle chemical polymer mineral supplier to the Canadian market. Stimworks continues to leverage our manufacturing and lab capabilities to expand our stim and workover business. We expect this to be a very steady and growing contributor to our Canadian business. Clear should continue to complement our existing drilling fluid and chemical businesses, and a nuance that we think deserves a lot of credit is that Clear constantly helps us as we commercialize new chemistries and ideas. Sialco continues to be an excellent contributor to our overall goal of being the clear number three oil field chemical supplier in the North American oil field. We hope to have our cationic polymer in the ground on a brine water frac, so a slick water frac with salty water, somewhere in Q3. As the industry uses more produced water and more frac flowback water to build slick water fracs, we think this addressable market should become enormous. We like our chances to do some serious new business in the frac market because of this new product. On to the biggest market for the company, the U.S. AES ran about 90 jobs through Q2. Today, we have 106. Permian has 67 jobs running today. The Northeast U.S. is at 17. The Gulf Coast, which includes the Eagle Ford's, at a dozen. MidCon and the Rockies make up the balance. We've continued to win work in the Permian because of technology. For example, our MMH system, which can help eliminate a fourth string of casing for our customers, and through outstanding service by our people. We've got properly located logistics, and we've got support from chemical manufacturing in Kansas to improve product quality and lower cost of goods, and our barite mill in Corpus Christi. I'll note that July in Corpus, we pushed out 23,000 tons for the mill. We're planning to expand the pads, so the cement pads where we stage ore, to allow us to process more product. Capacity of the mill is at 36,000 tons a month. We expect to add another shift to the mill to give ourselves room to continue to grow and sell to the market. Our Northeast AES operation continues to demonstrate superior results for our customers. The consolidation happening in that market looks to offer our customers a chance to drill longer lateral legs because of bigger contiguous land blocks, which is a positive for us. Overall, AES has made an incredible turnaround from a year ago. We have 2.5 times the jobs running from last spring off a platform we streamlined in the downturn. For my money, that's the definition of operating leverage. For U.S. chemicals, JChem Catalyst continues to expand treatment points and continues to win new frac business. Since acquiring Catalyst 1 year ago, we've added 60 more Permian-based employees and won significant new business. We're growing market share in a rapidly growing market. We continue to attract top talent that solves customers' problems to win business. The company gives our people the tools of a major company with the culture and sense of urgency of a small private business. We're nearly complete a 10,000 square foot office building in Midland that allows us to upsize office space and upsize lab space. We continue to have over 60% available throughput in our chemical manufacturing plant in Kansas. So if we can sell it, we can make it, service it, and properly run the business. As U.S. oil and gas production grows, we expect to be able to grow JChem Catalyst. I'll now turn it over to Craig.
Thanks, Tom. CES is very pleased to announce the results for Q2 2017. As detailed by Tom, these results reflect the positive contributions by all the components of our business. CES generated revenue of $237.6 million in Q2 2017 versus $97.7 million in Q2 2016, for an increase of 143%. U.S. source revenue for Q2 2017 was $163 million compared to $94.7 million in Q2 2016, representing an increase of 139%. U.S. revenue is up as AES continue to pick up rigs in the quarter, particularly in the prolific Permian Basin, and the continued growth of our production chemical offerings under JCAM and Catalyst. Canada sourced revenue for Q2 2017 was $74.6 million compared to $29.5 million in Q2 2016, for a very impressive increase of 153%. Spring breakup in Canada was truly just a weather-driven one for the first time since 2014, which allowed our activity-based drilling fluids business to be a positive contributor, and we gained share, albeit in a lower activity quarter. PureChem continues to shine with enormous year-over-year growth, with treatment points up 34%. With the increased revenue performance and without the benefit of pricing increases yet, based on the fixed cost absorption and operating leverage in our vertically integrated consumable chemical business model, we have been able to demonstrate margin improvement, which is driving our EBITDAC results. EBITDAC for Q2 2017 was $35.3 million as compared to negative $0.7 million in Q2 2016. This year-over-year quarterly increase is impressive, but I also want to highlight in Q1 2017 we did just over $36 million in EBITDAC, and despite the slowdown of activity in Canada during Q2, we almost were able to match that result. For the first 6 months of 2017, we are now at $71.4 million of EBITDAC versus 2016, where we were at $5.9 million, an increase of $65.5 million. With these improving results, our balance sheet continues to gain strength as well. Subsequent to the quarter end, we have renewed our senior lending facility, upsizing the facility from $150 million to $165 million with better pricing and term out to 2020. The upsize is in response to our growing U.S. business as we have increased our U.S. operating line from $25 million to $40 million. We were drawn $56 million on these facilities at June 30th, and we are now drawn about $65 million as of the release of our MD&A yesterday. As the business is growing, we are renting the bank's money to build working capital. At June 30, 2017, we had $285 million of positive net working capital versus debt and lease obligations of $365 million, putting us at net debt of about $80 million as at June 30th. With trailing 12-month EBITDA of about $115 million as at June 30th, we were 0.7 times net debt to EBITDAC and 3.2 times total debt to EBITDAC at June 30th. We see the total debt to EBITDAC number falling to under 3 by the end of Q3 2017 as we continue to strengthen our balance sheet and build our business. At this time, we'll turn the call over to questions.
Thank you. We'll now take questions from the telephone lines. If you have a question and you're using a speakerphone, please lift your headset before making your selection. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If at any time you wish to cancel the question, you may press the pound sign. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while the participants register for questions. Thank you for your patience. We have a question from Ben Owens from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Good morning, Ben.
I was hoping you could provide some additional color on the commercialization process for the cationic polymer product you talked about introducing in the third quarter. Are there any particular geographies you're targeting initially, and maybe could you give us a sense of the potential size of the overall market for that product?
Sure, Ben. To give a little bit of context to people, the scientists in Sialco have worked on this project almost since day one when we acquired the company. So they've been on this project 18 months. Our top research chemist in the company, Brian, PhD chemist, works out of our Vancouver plant. They've worked on building this molecule using unique methods to build the molecule, control the rate of heat increase while you react the chemistry. Today, we're working with a third-party manufacturer to scale up the reaction, meaning to make more than a crock pot size on a bench in a lab, but to build kettles or reactors in volume. We think that Well, our plan then is that if we can commercialize the product, we've run it in our Chandler flow loop in our Woodlands lab, we think we've got a product that will be the best cationic on the market technically. We think that the time in the reactor will allow our production costs to be economic. There's literally hundreds of possible steps that you can take or do as you build this molecule, which is why it took so long to perfect. But as we scale up supply with this third-party manufacturer, if we can break out a good market for this product, and our first targets are the Permian and the Northeast U.S., if we can prove out that there's a sustainable market, and I think common sense tells us the industry can't continue to use the same amount of fresh water, but it needs to be able to afford to use brackish water. We think we're going to offer our customers an economic polymer for brackish water. We see those two markets, and I would say the deep basin eventually becomes a market that uses a lot of that molecule. So three of our strongest markets, we've got mud plants and warehouses and yards all through those markets, so we can stage this stuff before it goes to the spread. We think by spring we could probably have enough volume to follow a spread or two all the time, and we're considering repurposing some of the reactors we've been building for hydrogenation in Kansas to instead be opportunistic and push out this molecule. Be modest CapEx. There'd be a very minor amount of work we've done in Kansas to date on hydrogenation that wouldn't apply. And if that market ever for some reason went away, all of those reactors could be repurposed again to make imidazoline, so corrosion inhibitor, to make scale inhibitor, to make other polymers. So we would, in the future, ideally look to be vertically integrated in that molecule, but also honor the relationship we're building with this manufacturer who we currently get some products from. We toll out to them or have them make some specialty products for us now. It's a long relationship that Cielco's had. So the addressable market, I think, Ben, will get bigger. And I think the three places are the gas market in the Northeast U.S., the Canadian market in the Deep Basin, and then the Permian.
Great. That was really helpful color. You know, as an unrelated follow-up, a couple topics have gotten a lot of attention on E&P conference calls this quarter in regards to the Permian. One's been rising Permian gas to oil ratios, and the other's been pressure changes in shallow zones while drilling. And I was just wondering if CEU saw any impact from those trends during the quarter in the production chemicals and drilling fluids businesses respectively, and if there's any challenges or opportunities for the company.
I happened to be in the Permian when that information came out last week, so I asked five or six very credible operators exactly about that. Specifically, that operator was talking about the Midland Basin. We see sort of the biggest amounts of money changing hands to build land positions in the Delaware. That's where the rigs are. And as people that are familiar with us know, one of our sort of value propositions to our operators in the Permian is to run our patented MMH mud system, which if it's run properly in the right place, allows a person to get through these water injection problems and not set a fourth string of casing. So we think that probably the capital markets have painted the Permian with too broad of a brushstroke. That's one part of the market. It's not all of it. There's 300 by 400 miles of acreage down there that people have spent a lot of money to build land positions. They're going to drill to protect their land positions. And the customers that I saw, Ben, said, that's one part of the market and it's one operator. I'll add, we don't do any mud work for that operator. We'd like to. Maybe there's a fit there. But there's going to be places where four strings of casing are needed. But if you go into the Delaware where the money looks to be most focused, I don't know that that necessarily fits. It's a big geographic market. And I think what got people excited was that it's like the Deep Basin. There's 10 horizons that you can drill and complete. So one operator in one part of it talking about results to a specific player area, I don't, that's not that concerning to us.
Okay, thanks. That's it for me. I'll hand it back. Congrats on the good quarter.
Thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, you may press star one if you have a question. The next question is from Greg Coleman from National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Congrats on that quarter there. I just have a couple real quick ones for you here. First, Craig, from just a modeling perspective, when we're thinking about costs going forward, the last couple quarters you've had SG&A sitting under $33 million. Seems to be pretty stable. Is that a good run rate for us to assume, you know, given the current levels of activity, or should we see it trending up and down for any reason?
Well, we do have variable costs in SG&A, particularly around compensation directed towards results. And then I think the other thing that will affect our Canadian dollar denominated SG&A is exchange rate. With the falling U.S. dollar versus Canada, that'll be a positive for probably cost on SG&A in the back half. And then there's probably some increase in costs due to adding people and then variable compensation increases as the business continues to improve. You know, my view, you're looking at, you know, probably being in the 13-ish percent range for a little while here. And so I would look at it that way, in my mind.
Okay, got it. So 13%, good level. And that incorporates your variable comp, obviously, too, which will swing with revenue.
Yeah.
Okay. How's the Catalyst JCAM integration and product cross-line sales going? Is the quarter that we saw here fully showing the impact of that in the sense that they're effectively a single functioning organization now, or is there still a bunch of low hanging fruit for taking, you know, some of the extensive JCAM product line and bringing it across the Catalyst Rolodex?
We think we've clipped the low hanging. Now it's kind of the medium, Greg. Is there going to continue to be opportunities to use solid chemistry in the Permian? We think so for sure. So many of the plays out there are so new that you're not quite sure what the solution to issues are yet. Vern and Trey and their people are confident that they can continue to use the bigger toolbox as a benefit, I guess, is the point. Day-to-day, the businesses are integrated in terms of operations and sales. We're working hard to integrate safety and QC. Lab services are completely integrated. I think the best days are ahead of us, though.
Interesting. Okay. Well, that's good to know that there's still a process to go. And then the last thing I just wanted to touch on was use of capital going forward here. You gentlemen spent some time at the pre-prepared remarks talking about balance sheet strength, refreshing the credit facility, taking a look at where the gross debt and net debt is sitting right now. And then in the press release, you talk about, you know, continuing to assess M&A opportunities, which seems like a bit of a boilerplate commentary because we know you guys are always doing a bit of tuck-ups. But can you talk to us about what you're looking at for targets that are higher on the radar? Without opening your hand too much, are we talking about potentially a few more tuck-in acquisitions or transformative? Are they sticking in your existing product lines, or would you be looking to step out into something else? And from a geography perspective, where are the holes you need to fill within your distribution network?
Our business is kind of 40-40-20 plus or minus, Greg, with drilling, production, frac. So to me, The best thing we can do for the business and the most realistic thing is to try to sell more stuff in frac, to try to gain share in U.S. drilling fluids, and to try to continue to take share in a growing market treating production in the Permian. I think a year from now, probably the things that we can do that are most accretive, I think we can do organically. I think the cationic polymer can pull through sales of surfactant, scale inhibitor, biocide, we're basic in all those products. They're increasingly being used in the frac fluid as operators are looking to optimize results. We're working on another project that it's a little premature to talk about, but it potentially has a big addressable market that we think we can run the table in if we're able to continue to match the initial results we've had on some work. So our focus today is organic growth. We're always looking. Everyone knows that. We don't have any geographic holes. So I think our job's to put our head down and sell to continue to create margin through increased volumes. But we're open for business for things that fit. The thing we're going to be most careful about is that we want the right people in the business. We're very pleased with the team, and we're going to be very fussy not to risk what we already have to try to just get a little bit more.
And I think it's important, Greg, to remind people on the call and investors that our M&A strategy didn't just sort of tumble out of the back of a truck. I mean, we made decisions along the way, and some of them came clearer, but these were strategic pieces that we wanted to put together, and the timing of those pieces coming together was based more on actually finding the right piece that fit the puzzle as opposed to, oh, now we think we want to do something else. So, you know, if we look back a few years ago, particularly around the U.S. expansion, you know, JCAM was a major need in our organization, both from a footprint and vertical integration stage. And as you acquire JCAM, the natural hole, the biggest hole in what JCAM could offer us was lack of presence in what we saw to be the fastest growing basin in the U.S., the Permian, which led us to buy Southwest Treating and then obviously Catalyst. And with those acquisitions, you filled in the vast majority of the opportunity for us geographically in the U.S. on the production chemical side. And we'd already covered the U.S. on the drilling fluid side, and as Tom has mentioned many times, the frac chemical sales that we will expand is going to go off those platforms. So, you know, we are constantly looking at opportunities. That's why that disclosure is in the MD&A. An example of that would be Stimworks. I would say, you know, 12 months ago, that wasn't really on Tom's and my radar, but the opportunity, the good fit, and what we see is the opportunity to grow that business on our platform made that a tuck-in, as you would probably describe it. So is there another Stimworks out there somewhere? Probably. Will it happen in the next year? Who knows, right?
Thanks, Craig, for that. That's it for me, and congrats again on the quarter.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you. As a reminder, you may press star one if you have a question. We have a question from Mike Mazar from BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. Just one quick one here. With regard to the Grand Prairie facility that you alluded to, do we have an idea of what the total build cost is there, and how much of that, or how it might be split, say, between 17 and 18?
Yeah, so Mike, if you noticed in our disclosures, we upped our guidance on total CapEx for the year this year to $60 million, being 44 and 16, so 44 expansion, 16 maintenance. The maintenance increase is just the reality as we continue to assess our fleet of moving vehicles. We've turned over more this year, and that's reflecting that. But most of the $8 million increase is reflecting the build out of the Grand Prairie facility this year and then into next year, and the total build out as it's planned right now is about 20 million Canadian.
Okay. Terrific. Thank you.
Thank you. No further questions registered at this time. I would like to turn the meeting back over to the presenters.
Okay, well, thank you for everyone's time. In summary, our vertically integrated model to supply chemicals, polymers, and minerals to the North American oil field is succeeding. We're growing revenue and margin without price increases. We problem solve through science and service to win work. We're committed to build out all of our sales arms, so drilling, frac, stem, production, and pipelines. We're maintaining our decentralized sales and management model, so distinct business units. What we have is common manufacturing, common scientists, logistics or real estate, and back end for the business. We're going to remain asset light and pursue free cash flow for our business and for shareholders. With that, we'll wrap up the call. Thanks for attending today's call.
Thank you. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and thank you for your participation.